Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, starting from June the 7th and running to the 9th, DCU campus will be home to the Union Cup, the biggest LGBT plus inclusive rugby tournament. And here to speak to us a little bit about it is the legendary Gareth Thomas, who joins us on the line. Gareth, hello to you.
Hello, guys. How you doing? All right?
Not too bad. I believe, by the sounds of things in behind you there as well, you've got a busy day and a busy afternoon ahead of you.
Yeah, it is a busy day, but you know what? It goes to show how far we've come is that there's so many people, not just wanting to, but also willing to talk about an LGBT plus inclusive sporting event.
It's quite incredible. Just looking at the sheer numbers of it, when you consider that what there was in the last 15 years or so since this has been going on, we've risen from 15 or 7 teams initially to up to 45 teams.
45.
From 15 different countries. I mean, that in itself is a tale of success, really.
Yeah, do you know what? It's a massive tale of success, but what I'm really conscious of, especially, you know, I don't like to talk about politics, but I think within the political world and sporting world, I don't think, even though we've come so far, it's never a time to rest on your laurels. I think there's always stuff that needs to be done, and there's always stuff that, you know, it helps just to keep promoting it, to keep in aware of inclusive tournaments, because it's not just about the participants, it's not just about the LGBT plus community. You know, this is an event that's come into kind of a sporting heartland of the world in Dublin, where people are fanatical about their sport. And it's important that everybody from Ireland becomes a part of it, so you have allies as well, because one of the important things, if I haven't played in World Cups myself, is it's not just the game and the results, it's the environment, it's the atmosphere, and that's created by people who are coming, whether they be LGBT plus or not. So even though it's grown in numbers, it's still really important that is constant promotion and constant positivity around it, and not just from LGBT plus people.
Yeah, because it's been mentioned that this week as well, this tournament is open to pretty much any team that wants to enter it next month.
Yeah, and I think a really important word, because a lot of people say to me, well, you know, why is it an LGBT sporting event when you don't just have maybe, like, you know, heterosexual sporting events? And it's not about that, it's about inclusivity, because, you know, for me, sport is one thing that, if there's differences, sport can bring them differences together. So it's about inclusive. It's about anybody of any ability not being judged on sexuality or on gender. It's about being judged on ability. And that's ultimately what these tournaments are all about.
You mentioned the environment, particularly in the UK at the moment. I mean, today alone, we've seen the FA, for instance, put out their video saying, "Don't be that idiot," whereby they're pointing out that they don't want any of their fans to be involved in any kind of abuse, whatever abuse that happens to be, or abuse of players or abuse of other fans, etc., etc. Like, it's great that these steps are being taken, but as you pointed to, it's almost sad that we're having to shake people to remind them that, listen, there's no call to be carrying on like an idiot, there's no call to be using hate speech, there's no call to be involved in any of that kind of stuff. It feels like over the past decade or so there have been huge strides made, but the last year or two, and I don't know if the political environment in the UK has fueled that a little bit, or here indeed as well, but it feels like that we've almost taken half a step back over the course of the last 18 months.
Yeah, and I think for me a scary thing is we all kind of know what we should or shouldn't say and when we should or shouldn't say things. But sometimes in heat of moments or environments, especially in sporting environments, we kind of lose that reality. We lose the reality of what we should and shouldn't say, because we feel like, you know, we're enabling ourselves to be able to get away with it. So I think, you know, if you scratch on the surface, we'd all very much know what we should and shouldn't do. But you scratch the surface, and underneath, you know, it's not as polished, it's not as shiny as we all like to think it is. And that's why I believe, you know, I believe in this, in the Union Cups. I believe in things like this, because I think they highlight to everybody the work that's continuing to be done and the promotion that keeps to need to be done. to make sure we do have a society that's very diverse and very inclusive, and people are okay with that.
Yeah, and I suppose the last thing you want is people feeling emboldened and thinking that they, you know, there are others that are making it acceptable to hold or to speak about hateful views. And I guess one of those cases we can point towards in the past while is Israel Folau, and I know you've been pretty vocal on the matter yourself. I just want your take on it, because I know this case, despite his initial claims that whatever way the chips landed for him from Rugby Australia's point of view, that he would accept it and move on, that's clearly and obviously not going to be the case from him from this point on. I don't know what your take on the case is as it currently stands, Gareth.
Well, you know, my take is of, my initial reaction was anger, but then I looked at sympathy to think that, you know, it's somebody who is a sporting icon, one of the best performers of rugby in the world that we have today, and his popularity, his status has been built on the game of rugby, and then for him to use that popularity, to use that status that rugby gave him, to promote what I class as hate speech, to influence other people and to influence, especially, you know, scarily influence the next generation of people to think, you know, potentially in the sports field or in the school playground, that something like this is okay to say, because Israel Folau has said it. I think, again, is another reason why things like the Union Cup are so, so relevant, because it's this as much as we'd like it for all to go away, the reality is that what Israel Folau said is out there. What Billy Vitopola said is out there, and it'll never, ever go away. And there'll always be people who will think like that. So it's getting tournaments like the Union Cup, events that are LGBT plus inclusive, to show that what they're saying is very negative and a very wrong thing. And I think for, you know, in the case of Israel Folau, for him not to just accept what's happened, to keep fighting, to keep going on, to keep promoting what he said, basically, I think just, you know, goes to show that for me, as somebody who's willing to be outspoken in the fight against it, to make sure my voice and what I do is a lot louder than whatever other people who have this hate speech and this belief, whatever they feel and think.
Both Folau and Vunipola have been, you know, quite open about the fact that any beliefs that they may have is rooted in their faith. Do you have any sympathy from that point of view in regards that they're basically parroting what they've been taught?
My view on that is that it might not be their words, but it's come from them. It's their beliefs. So, you know, I could walk around saying quotes and things from any other type of book or any other person and say, well, they're not my words. They were said by somebody else. So that doesn't give me the right, or shouldn't give them the right, to be able to hide behind the fact that they weren't their words. They're their beliefs. And to me, whatever their beliefs are is their opinions, is kind of just their words. And when you're employed as a professional rugby player, and as I said earlier, when you have a status and when you have a building that rugby has given you, to then use that against all the values and all the contractual reasonings behind playing for the Australian Rugby Union or the RFU, to go behind all that and use that support base that you've got from playing rugby to then promote something which to me is fueled with hatred, then you don't deserve to have that fan base in the first place, because you built it up to use something that's not positive towards the game, is very negative towards the game.
Mm. On the Folau situation, without wanting to hammer it too much, there's quite an obvious case that he's not going to be playing for Australia anytime soon. He's not going to be playing in Australia anytime soon. The thought is that clearly somebody's going to take a punt on him. Most likely the thought would be in France. I mean, what would your opinion be if he was to pop up for one of the top couture sites?
I think, firstly, my opinion, as far as that is concerned, I'd be very, very outspoken of it, whether it'd have any influence or very much doubt it. But my influence would be that anybody who decided to sign him would have to realise they're not just signing his ability, they're signing his beliefs. And if that's a club that promotes what Israel Folau is saying, then fine. But you find me any club in France or anywhere in the world that would promote his beliefs, then I'd pretty much say they're the club that are not well kind of supported in the public eye in general. So I understand he has the greatest ability, but to me, for a fan base or for a changing room environment, for me, Israel Folau personally would make a very difficult environment. And no one man, regardless how good he is better than the team, is better than the environment, is better than the club. So I would be very hurt if he was playing in Europe. But ultimately then the club that takes him will have to realise that they take his beliefs. And then with his beliefs and with his views could come a lot of negativity towards him. Gareth, towards him and towards the club.
Of course, yeah. Gareth, why we have you here, because, you know, obviously enough, it's a World Cup year. Wales are going to fancy their chances as well, given the Six Nations that they've just had. I just want to assess where you think Wales are at heading into this tournament, because something of a crossroads with Warren Gatland heading for the exit door and Warren Pivac coming in. But the constant talk for Ireland is that, you know, a Rugby World Cup semi-final for us would be good. Just tracing through how things could wind up, it could well be Ireland and Wales come a World Cup semi-final, touch wood, all going well for either side later on in the autumn. How do you think Wales are fixed heading into that tournament?
Do you know what? What's really good for Wales at the moment? So Wales struggle. We always have as a nation. We struggle with being favourites for anything. We don't carry that tag really well. But so I think even though people are saying we've had a great Six Nations, nobody's really saying, oh, look, they can win the World Cup. So that's really good, because I believe this Welsh team and as a Welsh public, we believe that if Wales will ever win the World Cup at any time, then this year will be the year that they will win it. And what's going in our favour, like I said earlier, is the fact that nobody's really saying, everyone's saying we could be there or thereabouts, but as a squad of players and under Warren Gatland, I know Warren Gatland's going to want to leave his legacy of winning the World Cup and winning it with Wales. So what he kind of says and how he implements that into the players is very powerful and very effective, but also he plays it down a lot. So I think behind closed doors, the Welsh players will truly believe that they can win the World Cup because of past performances and the run they're on, the individual ability, the collective ability that they're playing with. But in open doors, Warren Gatland or the rest of the team will probably just play everything down, go in there under the radar, and hopefully, like I say, I believe if they ever are going to do it, then this will be the year that they do it.
Did this year, from a Welsh perspective, surprise you? Because you talk about Wales not wearing the tag of favourites. Well, clearly that was something that didn't suit Ireland heading into the Six Nations that we've just had. Did it surprise you how well Wales performed this year?
I think the real surprise was the Ireland game. But then I'm not sure if that was a surprise that Wales played so well or how poor Ireland performed. But nothing really surprised me. I think that's the great thing with this team now, is that they've built up a reputation or built up a confidence to be able to play, and like they did out in France, win in narrow circumstances, win by playing badly. So we're not always talking about Wales's great performances. We're talking about their tenacity and their will to be able to constantly win. So I don't think it surprised anyone. I think we all kind of believed that they could, but we never again put them as favourites and thought, oh yeah, we're definitely going to win the Grand Slam this year. Because we looked at Ireland coming, and we looked at England coming, and thought, you know what, we're going to struggle with them two teams. But I think on the days when they had to perform, they just did enough. Now, if we talk about New Zealand, we always say New Zealand are the greatest team in the world because they just do enough. And some of Wales's performances in winning the Grand Slam were average at best, but what they did was enough to win.
What's the outside view on Ireland heading into this tournament? Because we kind of get lost in ourselves almost in how we view things, and I think with the Six Nations just passed, there's a lot of uncertainty, I guess, of how we will perform in Japan in September. What's the Welsh view on Ireland?
I think the Welsh view on...
And an honest one, Ireland. Please.
Yeah, no, mate, you'll always get an honest one from me, trust me. I think the honest view of the Welsh public from Ireland is, I think outside of Ireland, when you look at Irish rugby and, you know, the great victories against New Zealand All Blacks, you think, you know, are these guys are world beaters, they're going to go to the World Cup. But I think this Six Nations, they were really, really disappointing. And I think as a Welsh perspective, when they came to Cardiff, it was probably one of the biggest anti-climaxes for a Welsh fan, because we expected so much from an Irish team who had being able to go away and win, you know, the record in Cardiff was decent, and they just didn't turn up, on the day. So quickly you can start, as Welsh fans, we can quickly start saying, okay, well, Ireland, that maybe aren't the team that we thought they were, but I'm sure they kind of will get back to the position they're in. But I think that was the one game for Wales where everybody thought, you know what, if they can demolish a team like Ireland, which from the outside looking in has beaten New Zealand, has been constantly one of the best teams in Europe, if not the world, in such a convincing manner, then we're pretty much capable of a lot. So I think that game for us kind of wrote Ireland off a little bit, but also promoted Wales to a position where we really believe that the World Cup is within our sights.
Yeah, it's a strange one, because this year, I guess, started off with Ireland being absolutely sure about how the provincial thing had worked out. I mean, we'd seen Leinster last season win the double, and from a Welsh point of view, we'd seen nothing but turmoil over there in terms of the provinces and how they might be aligned going forward. I mean, there's still a degree of uncertainty there. There's obviously a willingness to change and a willingness to implement something in North Wales, and how the national team formed seemed to be at odds with that. I mean, it is a strange setup out there over there at the moment in terms of the provinces and in terms of the club sides with Wales.
Do you know what? It is. And if you look underneath the level of international rugby, and the stability of rugby in Wales is very, very weak. It's very, very crumbly. Nobody really has an understanding. But what Warren Gatland does really well, and what the Welsh team do really well, and maybe it's something that could be reflected in Ireland, I don't know. I've never played provincial rugby in Ireland, and I've never been involved in the international setup, is when they turn up to train with Wales, they leave everything at the door. So they leave whatever troubles are going on. They focus on the one jersey, and that's the Welsh jersey. They don't worry about their provincial jersey, about their club jersey, about anything else. They don't worry what they do at the clubs, how successful they've been. It's all about walking into that Welsh rugby union team environment and being in that environment and focusing on what Warren Gatland and the Welsh Rugby Union are all about. So that the trouble that's behind there, they're not taking it in. Even from an outside perspective, you could think, well, surely this would disrupt players. But it doesn't. They've created an environment there where the focus is representing Wales and listening to the one coach in Warren Gatland and doing what he says and delivering on the plans, the game strategy that's for Wales, not worrying about anything else.
He'll be massively missed when he goes.
Oh, but yeah. It's kind of a strange thing, because we, as any international rugby, you know, there's the longevity of an international rugby coach. I think he's kind of outseen, and lasted longer than many union coaches. And, you know, he will be. And as much as I would always love to still be a part of Welsh, I'm not a coach, but I'd much as love to be part of the Welsh Union, I would dread to take over from him, because literally what he's created, the environment he's created, the successful culture that he's created within Wales will be very, very hard for someone to come in and match, let alone even better. So, he has definitely created a winning culture in a country, in a team that before he came along, the one word that could describe us really was average. Mm. Whereas now, if you describe us, the one word would be successful. So I think to create that in a country where rugby is our national sport, 3.1 million people live that sport. They all have an opinion on it. Yet to have brought everyone together in the manner he has and in a successful manner, for me, you know, whether you like foreign coaches or not, you've got to tip your hat and say that he has done one hell of a job.
He absolutely has. And Gareth, so have you, particularly in the past decades since your public coming out, and the work you're doing here with the Union Cup as well. It's absolutely to be admired and to be applauded, and long may it continue. I know you're calling on people over here to use the hashtag #TryWithPride surrounding the Union Cup. You're involved in the Diversity in Sports event there as well in Dublin this today. So, Gareth, we'll see you at the start of June, and hopefully we'll speak to you down the road as well.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Cheers.
Cheers. Gareth Thomas there. And don't forget, you can check out the Union Cup and all its details and its tickets at unioncupdublin.ie.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.